Well, Brian, you're way ahead, A, financially, B, healthier horse and a better looking horse.
So you could be feeding the same amount, but getting more nutrients. So this is even more beneficial for the hard keeper to help maintain that condition or build condition into the cooler months.
The misconceptions about, it's not necessarily more hard feed you have to feed. It's the quality of the feed that you feed.
Welcome everyone to episode 104 of the Send Nutrition Podcast. You're with your host Brian and Peter today. And today's topic is feeding in winter, what you need to know. How are you, Peter?
Brian, I'm episode 104. I'm feeling like 104 some of these days on a Friday after the week we've had.
No, it's been a good time at Send. It's been jam-packed. And this subject comes at a good time as we get into winter and we start thinking about getting or keeping warm. I know, Pete, you don't mind a couple of drinks to keep warm.
Well, I'll give Jane Campbell from Campbell's Wines in a Rutherglen a plug. Oh, Jane's an existing client of ours, and they've got a winery there in a Rutherglen. Amazing wines and very good value. So, Jane, if you're listening, big hello from the Send team. We love your wines. Sometimes we like your wines too much, but it is a very good drop. So,
yeah, no, I second that. The Shiraz is excellent, and yeah, we thank Jane for being a valued Send client, and we're actually a client of hers as well. So,
yeah, it's another family-owned business. We sort of like supporting each other, which is really good.
Yeah, so that leads into this topic, and it's all about when winter starts to come and the cooler weather's upon us. We look to our horses and we want to keep them warm, but we don't want to rely on rugs. We want to do it via nutrition first and get those foundations because it has a host of health benefits. And as Peter touched on before, it has been a busy week as usual in Send, and this subject keeps coming up about winter feeding and tips on how to feed effectively and for the health of your horse.
Yeah, exactly, Brian. And I think there's a really big misconception in the industry where I think as soon as it gets colder, even if it's like goes from 25 to 20, even from 20 to 15, horse owners automatically, they just, you know, they run to the feed shed to get the thickest rug they can and, you know, throw that on, increase the hard feed by 1 or 2 kilograms. And it's like, geez, got to get ahead of the eight ball, got to fatten a horse up before winter time hits. So the horse doesn't sort of drop off a cliff in terms of weight wise. And that's not necessarily the right thing to do. So I think I said to Brian, look, let's do a podcast about winter feeding. We haven't really done anything specific, but it's more about to tell our customers and even our new listeners, the misconceptions about, it's not necessarily more hard feed you have to feed. It's the quality of the feed that you feed to get that horse in a healthy condition, not just to, you know, give it a big belly so then it drops off once winter hits.
100%, Peter, I agree. We see it time and time again with clients and particularly stud farms that we consult. They're feeding less hard feed. The horses are in better condition or keep their condition better throughout these cooler periods. And as we know, every horse is different. Minor adjustments need to be made on their own environment because there's different temperatures in each region of Australia. But it's like knowing your horse at the end of the day and adjusting the volumes and amounts to keep a healthy weight, not necessarily an overweight horse into the winter period.
Spot on, Brian. So what I might do is I'll give our listeners maybe two examples I've had this week, obviously, just to sort of outline it so they can visualize exactly what we're talking about. So one of the stud farms, look, they've got about 120 horses and look, they're based sort of down in sort of southern Australia where it does get a little bit cold. The farm basically has got barren paddocks. The horses are on sand pretty much. There's no pasture. So it's really, really difficult for that particular business to keep condition on a horse through the winter, let alone sort of leading into the winter. So, you know, later reached out to us. We just said, look, what are you feeding? And it was a typical sort of diet, you know, 6 or 7 kilograms of a particular product, you know, that's recommended for stud farms.
Yeah, it was probably fiber at 10%.
Yeah, 8 to 10% fiber, you know, mainly grain-based, a lot of grain byproducts. And look, she just wasn't getting the results with the horses and sort of told me the diet. I said, look, how much roughage? She said, look, they're not really eating that much roughage. And the point I'm trying to make is that if you're going to give a horse 6 or 7 kilograms of a commercial product, that's going to leave very little room in a horse's stomach to eat any hay. That's just full stop. So long story short, we adjusted obviously the hard feed on a transition period to bring it down to zero over 7 to 10 days. And obviously we introduced our lupin pellet and our grain free at a particular balance to complement the particular hay that she was feeding. And literally, look, within a week, the horse is starting doubling up, they triple their intake of hay, and they're only on a kilogram of grain free and a kilogram of lupin pellet, plus the scent oil and a couple of the scent supplements. And she said within, like, it's in about 3 weeks now, she said the horses have never looked better, and they're eating one third of the actual volume of feed, of hard feed, what they were, but they're actually smashing the hay now, which is what they were lacking previously.
Yeah, it just goes to show a nutrient profile that is geared to the horse's physiology is so much more beneficial for their overall system, as Peter described. If the horse is dappling up, which is genetic, but they're reaching their genetic potential in their condition, then there's something right or something going on that's positive within all their body systems, instead of feeding the opposite way with that huge volume of hard feed or not enough roughage going through because of that stomach being full. And as in Peter's example with the winter pasture being reduced or dying off, switching from the pasture to hay is important. But one thing, and this is probably the first tip that we can give, is don't switch from 100% pasture to 100% hay. Do it gradually. So if you know your pasture is going to die off or the growth is going to be lower, introduce hay at that time gradually over a period of time, because this eliminates a sudden change in the nutrient profile, because your pasture profile is different to your hay profile. And we know sudden changes in diet can be a risk factor for colic, so you're limiting that condition as well. So that's an excellent example, Peter, on a large scale with 120 horses, of the effect of feeding high fiber, low sugar, low starch into the winter months.
Yeah, no, that's very well said. And there were, look, Brian, there was three or four sort of laminitic horses there that obviously, you know, could very barely walk, you know, on a good day. And obviously switching them away from the grain byproduct feed and such a high volume, which obviously, you know, was contributing to inflammation, to a very low sugar, low starch diet, but more critically with the right vitamins and minerals and more roughage. I mean, those horses picked up, you know, within 2 weeks, literally.
That's so fantastic.
And that's the thing, like, we're not working miracles here. All we're doing is we're just balancing the diet with the right amount of roughage. And I think the misconception, as I said previously, is that it's more hard feed, more hard feed, more hard feed. I mean, horses in a wild, you know, they evolved on pasture. They're trickle feeders, they're fiber fermenters. So how can you sort of feed 6 or 7 kilograms of a grain or grain byproduct feed to a fiber fermenter and expect, you know, amazing results?
100%, Peter. And this fiber fermentation in winter actually generates more warmth than grain.
Yeah, Brian, I did a bit of research, which even shocked me. So the study that we found was that fiber fermentation increased the heat inside the horse 3 times more than a fed a grain product like oats or corn.
Yeah, so they've got their own internal furnace, which we need to use as an advantage in winter, because relying on rugging and trying to do it artificially through rugging, it does have its place, but it's better if the horse has that fiber fermentation for its immune system, especially because 70% is in the gut, but also for that whole movement of indigestible and digestible fiber is really good at lowering the risk of colic and other metabolic problems. So don't reach for the rugs, reach for more fiber.
Yeah.
And I think that even leads to our hard feeds being over 30% fiber. If you're switching from 10% fiber hard feed to 30%, that's more warmth within the horse, and that's going to be an advantage going into winter.
Yeah, almost 3 times more. And this is why the horse's coat grows longer, which a lot of owners hate because it looks a bit crappy, but that's a natural process. So when a coat gets longer, it actually traps the heat that it's getting generated from the fiber fermentation, which actually keeps the horse warmer. So then you don't need to put that thick, you know, doona rug on or so forth. And this is where I think sometimes people can go wrong, because they get under the scent feed, they're feeding a lot of fiber, and then they're still rugging with a really thick, heavy rug, and then a horse is sweating inside. So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, because you're doing all this good work, and now the horse is sweating all the vitamins and minerals and getting dehydrated at the same time.
Yeah, no, spot on, Peter. And when you look at sweat detection from a horse owner's perspective, I actually did a bit of digging around on this. And are horse owners good at detecting sweat underneath the rug? Yes and no. So Dr. David Marlin, who is a world-renowned equine scientist, he does a lot of respected studies and is well-respected in the industry. And he did a lot of this sweat sensor detection under rugs and asked owners in this experiment to see when they thought there was sweat. And the conclusion to this study was that the horse owners did not detect the sweat when there was actually sweat in the sensors. So horse owners can be forgiven for not detecting the sweat pattern or the initial sweat from a horse being over-rugged. So what we're trying to say is be mindful of over-rugging, and a lighter rug should be reached for first, and looking at those signs of over-rugging is really important.
Yeah, that's well said, Brian. And look, my two cents on that is a lot of people clip their horses too, obviously, in this time period, and they compete and what so forth. So if you did clip your horse and it's got no coat, maybe you should be looking at a lighter rug first, just to, like as Brian said. So it's almost better to start on the cautious side with a really light rug and see how your horse is than to throw like eight rugs on it and then it's dripping with sweat. So start light and then work your way up if you see your horse possibly might be cold.
Yeah, I agree there, Pete. And furthermore, with the performance horses that are clipped, and if you do over rug, because the rugging slows down their metabolism, you may have undigested calories from over rugging, and that can lead to calories stored as fat and not being burnt off. And this would be a disadvantage with a performance horse. So we know clipping does have an advantage with drying the coat, particularly after performance, even late in the afternoon when you need to have a dry coat. But yeah, just be mindful, as Peter said, with the over-rugging and getting your feeding foundations right first with high fiber.
Yeah, it's almost like the way that I look at it, it's almost like a furnace, Brian. Like the more fuel you add to the furnace, the hotter it gets. And then eventually that smoke or that heat has to escape somewhere. And obviously with a furnace, it goes through the chimney. But if you've got the chimney blocked, then obviously that heat gets trapped inside and it just follows on what you just said. You know, the excess calories obviously are stored inside, which could contribute to, you know, the horse not getting fit as quickly, maybe poor performance and just being really lethargic and lazy.
Yeah, it's a real big balancing act, and every horse is individual the way they deal with temperatures. It is known that they can adapt to a temperature, or they, just like a human, so say someone from Victoria moving to Queensland might jump in the ocean because they think it's not cold, and it's the other way around. So horses get acclimatized to where they are brought up, and then over time, if they're moved to another place, they can tolerate the cold a lot better.
Yeah, and it's also best to start, obviously, the journey to try to get yours in a very healthy condition before winter hits. So you don't want to be, you know, starting this process on the first day of winter if your horse is backwards, because you're really going to be pulling your hair out and just going to be really stressful. So normally we recommend at least sort of 2 or 3 months before winter if you have got a horse that's a little bit light on. And obviously the foundation should be, whether it's, you know, whether it's pasture. Like if you're in North Queensland or even, you know, in the northern part of Australia, you might have pasture the whole year round. So this podcast isn't really going to be, you know, as receptive to you than if they're in Tasmania or in Victoria, where it gets sometimes to below 5 or even 10 degrees.
Yeah, 100%, Peter. As you said, it's the hard keepers that require the attention coming into winter. And obviously you've got the usual checks like the teeth and worming and ensuring that the quality of your forage is good. So we do recommend getting your forage or your hay tested so you know where you stand. You'll see your protein levels, your fiber percentage, your sugar and starch. And then you can work around that by balancing it with a good quality vitamin mineral product like the Sen CF50 or the Sen Grain Free. Also for these hard keepers, oil is really handy to have as it's energy dense, up to 2 to 3 times the calories of the hard feed. So that's really nice how it has no sugar and starch, but also helps build condition with the horse coming into those cooler months. And then finally, digestive support in the form of Extra Balance, which contains a lot of probiotics. It has other gut support factors in it, which helps extract more nutrients from the diet. So you could be feeding the same amount, but getting more nutrients. So this is even more beneficial for the hard keeper to help maintain that condition or build condition into the cooler months.
Yeah, that's very well said. So basically you're feeding the same amount, but a lot more is actually getting absorbed into the bloodstream. So it's, you know, as a rule of thumb, obviously if you're feeding 2 and you get 1.8 being absorbed, it's going to be a lot better than if you're feeding 4 and only once getting absorbed. Yeah. So that's what Brian's referring to.
And we see this time and time again. Like, we've got other parts of Australia, it can get down to 0 or minus. They're feeding half the amount of hard feed that they used to feed back in the day when they were giving their 4 to 6 kgs of hard feed. They've reduced it down to 2 to 3 with the Sen. The horses are in better condition, particularly the brood mares, because you don't want a fat brood mare inside because that's less room for the foal to grow. That's another rabbit hole, and that'll be covered on another podcast. But when you're looking at the overall health of a horse being in a good condition, not overweight, and built up on a foundation of fiber, low sugar and low starch is the healthiest for their systems.
Yeah, I'd like to add too, Brian, that Lucerne, obviously, we don't recommend as an ad lib forage. So there's still people out there feeding Lucerne, you know, God forbid, prime Lucerne to all their horses. We've mentioned this 1,000 times. Lucerne is a legume. It's a bean. So it's like us having a big breakfast of baked beans and going out there trying to hit the day and go to the gym and be motivated at work while all that blood's going to our head and we want to go to sleep. So, you know, if you are having sort of behavioral problems, it might be that Lucerne's contributing to that with too much protein, and then it's putting extra pressure on the kidneys to excrete that protein through urine, which in hindsight might be dehydrating your horse at the same time. So it's like, it's just a chain effect. And we had a client here that popped in to see us, and she was one of the ones that was feeding Lucerne ad lib, and all those symptoms, irate behavior, obviously, you know, urine being more clouded than sort of what it should be. And the horse was on, obviously, ad lib, unlimited Lucerne. So, you know, whether it's a 50-50 or even, you know, if it's a grassy hay, you got to get back to what they were in nature. You know, Lucerne doesn't grow in nature. You know, all these sort of barley hays, they don't grow in nature. That's something that's been cultivated, and obviously horses love it. But, you know, I love chocolate and ice cream, but I don't eat a kilogram of ice cream every night before I go to bed.
Yeah, and I think another feeding myth or something that pops up a bit is when a horse owner boils barley or creates a hot bran mash for their horse in winter, because, okay, yes, as humans, we cook our feeds because they're nice and warm like a nice soup. But what is actually going on when you boil the barley or you're offering your horse a hot food? Do you think that makes them warm inside? And is that the train of thought? Because when you break it down, yes, you're doing the right thing. Okay. Barley is 70% starch. If you boil it, it makes the starch more digestible. So then you have less hindgut issues. But starch is starch. It gets converted to glucose in the system, which creates insulin spikes. So then that's another source of calories that needs to be burnt off. When you look at it scientifically, when they digest starch and this boiled barley or the hot bran mash or something, it generates half the amount of heat or even a third of the amount of heat compared to fiber fermentation. So offering a hot food or a warm mash is not actually equating to a warmer horse inside. It's actually less warm than if you fed them a biscuit of hay or a fiber-based hard feed.
That's really well explained, Brian. Is that like me? Let's just say this week I'm going to eat a salad every single day because I really want to look after my health and like cut out all the sugar. But yet I'm going to, on a Friday, have my salad. I'm going to have like 2 cans of Coke with my salad.
Yeah. In a way, or if I go through a drive-thru, I don't do this much, but you get a Big Mac and get a Diet Coke or a Coke Zero.
What about the other drive-thru, Brian?
The CWS. Hey, I try and keep it to... I'll plug them. Brookvale Union Lemon Squash Vodka.
Are they paying you to say this or what? I didn't realize we had sponsors on the show.
So good, Peter. And I put pomegranate seeds in it.
That's the healthy part of it, Brian.
They're really high in antioxidants. So yeah. It's a bit of balance there, but that's only in moderation, only at the end of the week.
Exactly. Just to unwind. Yeah,
to
unwind and put an end to the hectic week that we've been having. Yeah. But look, anyway, let's get back on track before you go sideways. Is there any other points that you wanted to add in terms of the myths?
It sort of just adds to the whole thing that we do at Sen, and it's feeding according to physiology. Our feeds have an advantage into winter because of the fiber content being over 30%. It has that high vitamin mineral profile, which is required in winter because even your hoof growth in winter, it slows down. It's important to get your vitamin mineral levels in a good high level through these months where they're required by the horse. And the immune system, especially also with the trace mineral load, zinc is used in many pathways. So ensuring that and checking your levels of your trace minerals especially is very vital to having all the body systems of the horse working efficiently and effectively through winter.
Yeah, Brian. And one point I'd like to add too on top is with all the horses, obviously, majority... Sorry, Brian, one point I'd like to add as well is with pasture getting low in most parts around Australia when it gets really cold, obviously a lot of owners are going to be transitioning onto a particular hay. With the hay, as you mentioned, it does, when it dries, it loses a lot of its vitamins, minerals, but it also loses most of its omega-3 too. So if you're going to have a horse that's just on a hay diet without any pasture as addition to the hay, you really got to look at maybe increasing the sen oil. Obviously, at 60% omega-3, the horse cannot manufacture omega-3 by itself. It has to get it through pasture. So if you've got no pasture and you're feeding hay, you don't want to create a deficiency over winter time, where if you bounce back over winter and then you're deficient in the summer, you've got to try to catch up for the lost time. So even if you you've got a horse that's a bit light on, double the oil, whether it's from 50 mil to 100 mil, A, you're going to get more omega-3, but B, you're going to get a lot more calories. And as I mentioned previously, 100 mil of oil is about 300 grams of oats or corn or barley or meal run. So you are going to be putting calories into the horse to help with weight gain without doing the insulin spikes, as well as the omega-3 benefits on top.
Yeah, it's heaps good because there's no sugar and starch as well, and there's no insulin response. So there's a lot of positive benefits for the horse, and it mirrors the omega profile of fresh pasture, as Peter said, and a good way to get calories in. Probably the other thing coming into winter we have to be alerted about is the reduced water intake, whether that is due to the water being too cold. Like if you've got an outside temperature of 0 degrees, does the horse want to drink? So you've got to look at ways and strategies to warm your water or have it in a more comfortable temperature for your horse to actually drink, because if the horse ingests less water, they're at a higher risk of developing impaction colic. Also, ensure that you're giving enough salt throughout winter as well, not only through summer, but winter is crucial for thirst activation and hydration. We work off around 10 grams per 100 kg, so 40 grams for a 400 kg horse, and this also helps water be absorbed by the cells, helps lower the risk of impaction colic, and keeps a horse hydrated.
And if a horse is still obviously performing in eventing or some sort of strenuous competition, we do recommend to still top up the electrolytes on the days that obviously it's getting a lot harder work or a higher intensity work. Also leading into an event for 2 or 3 days, and then 2 or 3 days after the event. So the salt, as Brian mentioned, is sodium chloride. It's great there for maintenance, helping them drink and do everything else. But the electrolytes, it does have extras in it, like the zincs, there's coppers, there's a bit of magnesium and calcium. It's just to replace the sweat that's lost, where the salt just maintains obviously what's there.
Yeah, so I think if our listeners can take home a few of these tips and apply it throughout winter, it's still probably not too late. If you see your pasture starting to not grow as well and you've got to get the hay in, it's probably now is the right time to start getting that one batch of hay to go through the whole season, because you've got a more consistent nutrient profile. Feed Central is an excellent resource. Probably should be sponsored by them, because
they should be paying us.
Yeah,
like, plugging them so many times.
I think what they provide in terms of the analysis is really good. You can, as everyone's got different environments, conditions and needs for their horse, you can really go and deep dive. Yes, you're going to provide 5-6 kgs of this hay, then you can work out, so you're not doubling up on what amount of hard feed you need, then the calories and the omega-3 source, and we're getting the results at the end of the day. And we get more and more, particularly stud farms and higher profile trainers, looking at trying to feed more efficiently with quality rather than quantity.
Yeah, that's really a summarized. From my 2 cents with forage first, as always, is the feeding for horses. So we can't, we can't echo that enough. We're not in a business of selling, hundreds of tons, if not millions of tons of feed every year. We're all about quality. So we don't make any money out of hay, but that's what horses evolved on, hay and pasture. So without that foundation, you're never going to get the best results. And then, as we said, if it's a forage only diet, hay only, you got to look at correcting the vitamin mineral deficiencies in that hay. If you've got a good doer, that's where the CF50 comes in. If you've got a horse that's a bit light on, then that's the grain-free, where it has got extra calories, it's got a higher feeding rate. Don't forget the omega-3s, obviously, with the hay, it's been depleted as well. So the sen oil with the extra calories as well as the omega-3 benefits. You're also going to be feeding a lot less of our products compared to the other products. So I'll just end with the stud farm. So long story short, it came down to a 2 kilogram feed rate with the sen products, obviously, to her 7 kilograms. So initially she thought, like your feeds are pretty expensive. But then once you work out the cost per day of what it's going to cost to do a kilogram of lupin pellet, what it's going to cost to do a kilogram of the grain-free, what it's going to cost to give 50 or 60 mil of the oil, and then the hay on top, it actually worked out 50% cheaper. Wow. To what she was feeding previously at a commercial feed that might have been $26 or $28 a bag, but having to feed 7 kilograms of that product.
Yeah, and also importantly, she was matching or even getting a better trace mineral profile, plus ours is chelated, so it's not competing for absorption. So you're actually way ahead for supporting the body systems. And coming into winter, that is so crucial, as what we discussed before.
Well, Brian, you're way ahead, A, financially, B, healthier horse and a better looking horse. So, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. Like when you explain it that way, a lot of owners just look at the price and go, oh, well, geez, that's expensive. And they assume you got to feed 7 kilograms of the grain-free. But that's why we do these podcasts, to educate the end user that it's more about quality over quantity. And, you know, I'm really glad that, you know, that Sizzler doesn't exist anymore, because I might be 200 kilos, I think, by now.
I wonder why they did go out of business, eh?
Well, maybe the obese epidemic that we're having.
Yeah, true. Everyone's looking at what we're eating. But it's great the last 5 to 10 years in nutrition advancements, particularly in humans. Like, look what they did in the 1980s, how we went onto low-fat diets, and now we're at low-sugar diets. Like, we are evolving. We're getting – I think the internet's really helped getting the right information out for people who want to listen and take note, even fasting and the fasting trends as well with the diets. And what we know is that digesting food takes up energy, and that takes away from your body repairing itself. And if you use these principles that – Peter and I use with our human health in horse health as well, and even dog health and all animals, we're all mammals. And at the end of the day, when we look at each part of what we do, not just nutrition, but also overall management, we have to really tick every box for each segment to work at its best.
That's extremely well summarized. And even from a personal point of view, Brian, I've taken you obviously with me one time to these cold plunge pools and you know, the hot and sort of cold immersion. And
put on record, I matched you as well in he the did. Time in the cold.
He was shivering, like I thought he's, I don't know, his skin was going to fall off his bones.
Maybe I needed a rug then. I'm just joking. Yeah.
But it does, look, it does sort of, you know, edge on towards the rug thing. So, I mean, I've been doing cold showers for the last 6 months, and I mean, I haven't been sick. I haven't felt better. I've got more energy. Just motivations that you feel really good. So the way it equates is to horses, and obviously if you're going to rug them, they're going to get really hot. You're going to feed them that, you know, they're going to get lethargic and what so forth, but you're actually weakening their immune system by rugging them and creating all that heat, where I think if you expose them to a degree to the natural elements, their immune system has to fight a little bit harder. And when it fights a bit harder, it gets stronger. So when I have my cold showers, especially in the morning, I mean, I want to jump out of there so quickly that when I jump in. But it's all a mental game, and your body gets adaptation. And, you know, when I started, it was 10 seconds, then it was 15 seconds. And, you know, now it's just a normal shower. And yeah, the water's cold, but it's not going to kill me. It's not going to give me a heart attack. And it actually builds my immunity, as well as all the mental sort of health benefits you get out of it as well.
Yeah, you definitely feel alive, that's for sure. But yeah, as I echo Peter's thoughts, if you get your fiber foundations right, you select the lightest rug first and make the observations about your horse and the signs that they may show. So if they're not shivering underneath the rug, they're not sweating as well. So just knowing your horse inside out, their history of how they acclimatized to a certain situation is going to take an effect, and their genetics. So every horse is different. There's no one blanket rule. Whether they shiver below 10 degrees, below 5 degrees, or below 0 degrees, it could be big variations, and you knowing your horse. But I think the point we're trying to make is don't over-rug.
And if you're gonna do a light rug, don't ration out like, oh, well, it's one biscuit of hay or it's two biscuit of hay. Your golden rule of thumb, and this is something that we try to preach every single day, buy yourself a slow feeder hay net, just jam it in with 2 or 3 biscuits of hay, and just make sure it doesn't run out. So people will ask, oh, well, how many biscuits should I feed? Like, you know, what's the kilo per biscuit? No. Get the hay bag, slow feeder, fill it to the brim, and then whether you replace it every 24 hours or 48 hours, your horse is going to self-regulate. So, you know, you could almost afford to not put a rug on depending where you are in Australia. As long as the horse has constant flow of roughage, you're going to be 9 times out of 10, you're going to be okay. Look, if you're at -5, of course you're going to have to rug, but make sure that the hay is there and don't ration the hay. Just give it as much as the horse will eat. Horse will self-regulate. You know, it might gulp the hay down, you know, within 5 hours if it hasn't had unlimited hay before. But then once it gets used to it, it's going to self-regulate and it's going to eat what it needs. We don't have to ration out the hay for them. They will tell us what they want to eat.
100%, Peter. And use lucerne sparingly. If you do like feeding lucerne, you must have sufficient grassy hay around it. That's in the form of pasture or a native grass. Only use lucerne around that time of when you're in that sort of acid splash range with performance. It's been proven that when you give long stem roughage before an event or leading into the travel to an event, it will ball up in the gastric environment. And that really helps with the acid splash and helps lower the risk of ulcers. But as we said in the podcast, don't feed ad-lib lucerne, otherwise you just run into a myriad of trouble because how rich it is in the protein and the calcium.
Yeah, only like broodmares in foal, you know, with a foalate foot, possibly young horses if you got high oxalate pastures. I think, you know, there's time a space. And place, yeah. Yeah, there's a time and a place for lucerne. You know, for performance horses, anyone competing, there's no need for it. It's easy to hit the, you know, the recommended protein level per day through a balanced diet. You know, like it's that easy. I think it's about 2 kilograms of protein per day for a horse in 4 weeks. And we've done a podcast on this previously. So if our listeners look back, we have done how much protein you actually need or are you feeding too much. Protein's very easily to hit the recommend daily rate. People assume that, you know, the more lucerne I give them, you know, the quicker they're going to run or the higher they're going to jump. It's, you know, perish the thought. It actually works the opposite way.
Yeah, 100%, Peter. I think we will wrap this one up now. Otherwise, we might be pushing into our Friday lunchtime.
Yeah, I had to rip Magellan off the microphone. I guess she's going to take my job, so I'm not going to let her back in the room.
Yeah, Magellan did really well at her first go. And, yeah, we had good feedback about the Cushings. And anyone that really enjoys this, please spread the word about our podcast on the podcast app. There are now review parts and even a feedback section, I think, on Spotify and Apple. So utilize that if you have the time and send through any topics that you'd like us to deep dive and cover. We get really good feedback on how we try and separate fact from fiction, but also try and speak less sciencey and try and simplify these topics down so everyone can understand and apply it to our real life horse environments and our scenarios that we have.
That's well said, Brian. I think we'll leave it at that.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you guys again next week for our podcast.